hearts. Be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. New Year's Eve is one of my least favorite nights. As any of you who has ever had an email correspondence with me knows, I'm a morning person and always have been. I can count on one hand, with a couple of fingers amputated, the number of times I have slept until 7:30. And most of those times were because something or someone kept me up until the eastern sky was turning pink. It wasn't until I was in my 50s that I accepted as inevitable the designation of party pooper on New Year's Eve and allowed myself to go to bed hours before the ball fell in Times Square. And then there's this day, saved because it's on a Sunday and we get to come to church, but normally in our house, it's the day the Christmas tree comes down. Talk about adding insult to injury. I find dismantling the Christmas tree very depressing. There is so little hope in the activity. For me, it's a sad afternoon, often tinged with some regret, because inevitably I look back at Christmas and wish I'd savored it more or slowed down or taken time to sit with all the lights out and enjoy the tree at night. What looms ahead is the coldest month of the year, my least favorite, and that the fact that the sun, though staying up 1 minute more each day, will not rise in the morning earlier until the second week of January doesn't help, because as you can see, it's the mornings I care about. And then we have today's reading from Matthew that seems entirely unsuited to Christmas, and you have to wonder what the people who established the lectionary were thinking. Where are the magi and the donkeys and the baby Jesus anyway? Instead, we've leapfrogged ahead to the lambs and the goats, to judgment and entreaties, to affirmation and to guilt. What Jesus is asking the assembled to do is to remember. Remember the choices they've made in the past. Come, inherit the kingdom that was prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food, thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me, naked, and you gave me clothing, sick, and took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me. And then those with whom Jesus is speaking, take off their turbans and scratch their heads. What in the world is he talking about? For they can't recall having seen him hungry or thirsty or, heaven forbid, naked. And they certainly didn't remember helping him. When was it that we saw you? They ask. And Jesus answers them, truly, I tell you, just as you did it to the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. And turning to the goats, who incidentally always seem to get the bad rap, turning to the goats, he scolds them for not caring for the poor and the needy and thus for him. But they protest his accusation and say they never saw him hungry or imprisoned or naked or outcast, and therefore they cannot be blamed for their neglect. They too don't remember, saying defensively, when was it that we saw you? And his response is the same. Truly, I tell you, just as you did not do it to the least of these, you did not do it to me. We too are asked to remember, to stop and look back over the year that has just ended. It seems an appropriate time, this first day of the year, to employ what has become somewhat of a spiritual practice in this congregation, pausing at the threshold. So before stepping into the new year, let's hover at the threshold and remember, each in our own hearts and as a gathered flock of sheep and goats and saints and strangers, this past year, and consider where we have served the gospel of Jesus Christ, where we have lifted Jesus from the side of the road and clothed him or visited him or welcomed him. And as we do this, I want to introduce another element into the contemplation, and that is the idea of holy. This could easily take up months of sermons, but I just want to raise the concept as a lens through which we look back and consider and remember. The Hebrew word for holy is kadosh. In the Hebrew tradition, the idea of the holy is a time or a space or an action that is entirely set apart from the common, the everyday, and the profane. That which is holy or kadosh is differentiated. It is designated for a purpose existing in another realm of our lives. As I understand it, there can be some human agency in this. We intentionally, for instance, come here on Sunday morning, setting this time apart for worship. God brought the world into being in 6 days, and on the seventh day, rested and contemplated and observed the creation. Any form of Sabbath is holy. Many of us pray regularly or meditate. Do you do so at a particular time of day in a designated space? Do you light a candle? Turn your phone off? Dim the lights? Some of us also have a kind of freewheeling, messy, ongoing conversation with God that seems a lot of the time less holy than desperate. If we can just keep God on the line, listening to our incessant chatter, God will be there to respond when we really need help. But there are other times when holy moments break into our lives through no initiative on our part. These are times when we are stopped in our tracks, when we know something or some time or someone holy has just passed by. If you have ever been beside someone who is dying, you know that that is holy time and space. Mourning itself is holy. All religions have different practices for mourning, different ways that set the time apart and acknowledge that those who mourn are really existing in a different realm than the rest of us. That in times past, people wore black, sometimes for 2 years, seems a really good idea to me because it affirmed to all around their vulnerability and altered state. There is a holiness to honesty that can catch us off guard, isn't there? Perhaps you're talking with someone and suddenly he or she says something and the space between you shifts and you feel vulnerable or you recognize the other's vulnerability. Without thinking, you see someone on the street or maybe even at coffee hour and say, "Hi, how are you?" And shock of all shocks, they tell you the truth. You have been invited onto holy ground. Tread lightly. Breathe and listen patiently. After all, you asked for it. And it is an honor to be invited into Kadosh. In looking back and remembering, I also realize that sometimes we know kadosh or holy moments only in retrospect, with distance and perspective. During 2016, we certainly shared some kadosh moments together. We unanimously and enthusiastically welcomed Arnold without, I think, a nanosecond's hesitation. I may be wrong, but I don't think that any of us approached his ministry with a wait-and-see attitude. On the contrary, we gave our hearts and souls to him, to his leadership, to his wisdom and wise counsel. This was easy for me because I've known him for 18 years. But to the rest of you, he was a stranger, and you welcomed him. Our refugee welcome ministry was and is kadosh. living our commitment to being an open and affirming congregation, we are not just opening our doors and letting people find us. We are actively going out and meeting them where they are. Our relationship with Patricia and Adriano, who came to Burlington from the Democratic Republic of Congo, is an example in point. We helped them with their dream of getting married in a way that both honored their culture and traditions and those of their faith. And when their official wedding happened here in the vestry, there was a particularly kadosh moment. It came for me when everyone was ready, the room was decorated, the cake displayed, the musician playing for the guests as they assembled, and the groom decked out and nervous, and the bride didn't arrive. And people wondered and whispered and shifted in the uncomfortable metal folding chairs. Patricia was an hour late to her wedding, and it's fair to say that the guests, many of them from our congregation who'd come to show solidarity, were a little annoyed and impatient. But the wedding went really well, and their happiness and joy erased any annoyance in a flash. That was God at work. That was Kadosh, holy, the power of love to wipe away petty annoyances and judgments instantly and to affirm love and community and grace. We have welcomed new members in this past year, as we will next week, served meals to the homeless at the Salvation Army, supported women in need at Lund, served the very vulnerable at the Joint Urban Ministry Project, mentored women in prison, supported each other through illnesses and loss and depression and joy. Perhaps the best kept secret in this congregation is its quiet commitment to feed the hungry and clothe the naked and visit the in prison and love the lost. Can we do better? Without question. My hope is that as we look back, we will also see those whom we walked past, those we chose not to serve in this community and perhaps in the next room. We will understand and see the holy ground that we stepped over to avoid like an icy patch in our path. Because the truth is that holy times can be frightening and terrible, and we are sometimes plunged into them because something awful has happened. And our world shifts, and we are suddenly in survival mode, and all the detritus of our lives vanishes as we focus on the crisis at hand. And in the moment, we might not recognize that these are holy times in any way. We would more likely call them hell. Only with time and perspective might we look back and see that somehow, by the grace of God, with unknown strength and the love of others, we came through. And if we didn't see that as holy time, we pretty surely see our lives as everyday kadosh, everyday holy, everyday a blessing. And this is what we did this morning in baptizing Dylan. We said, little Dylan, welcome. Welcome to a life where your parents and your godparents and your grandparents in this community will help you see what is holy in your life and where you are called with love to go. So leap, little Dylan, from this threshold to your glorious future as a beloved child of God. Grace and peace. Amen. Let's join together in singing.